Buddy the Hard Eye, for one. His eyes drifted toward me. Big Indian fella came in. Didn't say a word to nobody, just put his name on the list and turned around and walked out. I smiled, and Cliff Clay misinterpreted. You think that's funny, mister? I looked down at the list and continued smiling as my headache lessened just a little. It figured that the other toughest bastard on the Powder River, with a lineage that stretched back into the history of this country before there was a country, would find a way to provide backup even when it hadn't been requested.
I asked your question.
I looked at the cowboy for a moment more and then stepped past him and toward the door. I left behind the piece of paper on the bar that announced the Friday night fights, Powder River Pound Down Tough Man Contest, where the last name on the list was Henry Standing Bear. Chapter 4. October 20th, 7 days earlier, late morning. I had read the report that had been faxed from the FBI field office in Denver. Vic stood over my desk and fidgeted as I looked up from the 18 pages. You want me to read aloud?
I've already read it.
So what does it say? My undersheriff's distillation was always more entertaining than the reports from the feds. She crossed around the desk and sat in her usual chair.
If she hadn't killed him, it looks to me like somebody else would have. Or he would have been spending the rest of his life in a place where there are no light switches and you have to ask to go piss.
He was in trouble with the Department of Justice? She sipped her coffee but didn't put her feet up like she usually did. Instead, she sat there with her knees bobbing up and down.
Worse.
I sighed and forced more coffee into my system. What's worse than the FBI? Vic pushed her nose to her cheek with her index finger. Her voice was nasal, and she emphasized her South Philly accent.
He was made. The operative term here is made, the accountant in charge of operations for a casino operating firm, and in a matter of 5 years was able to siphon close to $3 million out of the place.
From the mob? She released her nose and smiled. She always smiled when she was relaying information like this, the way sharks smile when they see snorkelers wearing yellow.
Makes you wonder if he was dropped on his head as a child, or if he was eating fucking paint chips like they were Cool Ranch Doritos, doesn't it?
Or he was a lot tougher than anybody gave him credit for. I flipped to the photo on page 2. The deceased was inordinately handsome and could have been Italian except for his name. Barsad doesn't sound particularly Italian.
She shook her head. Wannabe. He started out as Willis Barnecki and worked for an accounting firm that did business for a number of casinos in Atlantic City, where he comes in contact with Joey Suits Venuto and was offered a job. He took the job and the three very, very large. But when the Fed turned up the heat after a waterfront-based racketeering investigation where a competitor ended up shot to death in the trunk of his own car in Union, New Jersey, Willis's name started popping up on FBI wiretaps like whack-a-mole.
He killed somebody?
Inconclusive.
She set her mug on my desk and laughed.
He gets locked up for a DWI in Atlantic City, but as thick as he was spreading it, you'd have thought he was the capo of capos. He drove around with an Italian flag on his car, for Christ's sake, and had Sinatra sound bites on his cell phone.
How did he end up in Ohio?
She continued to smile, the saltwater crocodile smile. This is the good part. Now, just on the offhand chance, the feds bring Willis in and tell him that they know he was the one that did the guy in Union. And lo and behold, Willis Canary Barnicky starts singing like Frank at the Stardust. He names names from exit 9A to 16B on the Jersey Turnpike and assists the DOJ in obtaining about a half dozen convictions. He gives up a lot, but not everything, because I guess he's just a certain brand of moron. Evidently, he had a list somewhere, and the DOJ wants it ever so bad.
A list?
In his short time in the slam, he got in the habit of making kites, notes on tiny rolls of paper. The agent I talked to in Denver said Barsad never got out of the habit and that they found a lot of them, but not the one with the names. She paused, looked at her coffee, but didn't pick it up. Now, what do you do with someone like that once they finish testifying as much as they're gonna? The hand that was holding up my chin slipped over and covered my face. I peeked at her from between my fingers. Witness protection? Hello, Youngstown, Ohio, where Willis, now known as Wallace Ballantyne via the feds, gets a job accounting for Central Ohio Steel, wears a tie, and reinvents himself as a pillar of Midwestern society. Gets in touch with some of his old buddies in an attempt to make good, and in 3 years, he accumulates another tidy nest egg before being fired and sued by the owners. Wallace Ballantyne settles out of court for an undisclosed amount, which the owners say is far less than the amount he embezzled, but that puts him in the papers, and soon he has to reinvent himself once again, just a little farther west. First Las Vegas, then here. I sighed the words. Rancher Wade Barsad. She picked up her coffee. Powder River, let her buck. I played with the handle on my mug. It all makes sense. People have been hiding in that Powder River country for over 100 years. She stood when I did and walked out to the dispatch desk where Ruby was going over the reports from DCI. I leaned against the counter and Ruby started to hand them to me. Did you read them? She batted her neon blue eyes over her lowered glasses with the pearl string, more than giving the impression of a second-grade schoolteacher. Yes. I nodded and then crossed to the wooden bench beside the steps. I preferred audio most times. Let's have it, Sparky. Ruby frowned. She disliked nicknames. She doesn't stand much of a chance. Vic had taken the report and was silently reading. She looked up. His body was incinerated. She crossed her legs and leaned an elbow on the counter. But they found all 6 melted slugs in his skull. Having sensed my dissatisfaction, Dog ambled from behind Ruby's desk and came around to rest his head on my knee. The report said that the fire, possibly started by lightning, possibly not, actually began with the barn and then drifted over and burned the house. That must have been a fun one for TJ and the bag boys. I petted Dog's broad head. Where was the confession taken? Ruby blinked and watched me.
At the scene.
I nodded and stared at the pattern of the old wooden floor and at the sway in the marble step at the landing. I thought about how many times my boots had hit that step, having first noticed it when my daughter had picked it as the favorite place to sit her 6-year-old butt. Katie hadn't called recently, and it was weighing heavily on me. She and Michael, Vic's younger brother, were seeing a lot of each other, and I was thankful for the attention the Philadelphia patrolman was lavishing on her, but I wondered where it was all leading. She'd been in an extremely bad relationship before Michael, one that had ended in her being severely injured. And the statement was? Vic read from the file. I dreamed of shooting the son of a bitch. I dreamed about it every night, and I finally did it. I shot him. I shot him 6 times. It was quiet in the office as I repeated the words to myself. I dreamed. I'd come to terms with the fact that Katie had gone back to Philadelphia, but it didn't make it any easier. I'd once again grown used to her company. The coffee in the mornings as I tried to get her to let me fix something for breakfast, the workouts at Durant Physical Therapy, the way she'd breeze into the office like Venus on the half shell and pull everybody out of their bad moods. The way my deputies, Sizer Vittoria, Double Tough, and Freimeyer, looked at her when they thought I wasn't watching them. The afternoons in my office, where she would sit with her legs curled under her to read another book in her Read a Mystery a Day plan. The quiet dinners at home. Walt? I continued to pet Dog and glanced up at my undersheriff's unforgiving eyes. The last part. She says she shot him. She says she shot him 6 fucking times. I nodded and looked at the two of them. Ruby weighed in, and it made me a little irritable to see how quick they were to gang up.
Walt, she repeated the statement en route to the Campbell County Jail, and once again to the investigators, and then to DCI. All in all, she confessed 4 times.
Vic shook her head at me.
Walt, this is a forcible felony with purposeful and premeditated malice.
She paused for a moment.
Back in Philly, we used to call it a whack job.
It was 2 hours later in Philadelphia, but still early enough for me to make a phone call. I was being tough and not calling as much. I was doing really well and had held myself in check for a day at a time, only phoning her every other day. At least I thought I'd been doing really well, until the irritated Daddy on the other end told me otherwise. I went back to studying the floor and quoted the passage of the legal description of homicide that Vic had omitted. You forgot of sound mind and discretion. She interrupted, tossing the report back onto Ruby's desk.
Mary Barsad could be nuts, and I'm sure that's the tack that the defense attorneys are going to take. But she shot him in the head 6 times. She shot him till she ran out of bullets. And she shot him just to watch his head bounce on the mattress.
I studied the veins in the marble step and thought about the veins in Mary Barsad's temples, and then about the thoughts that resided there, the things that visited her while she slept. I could feel words creeping into my mouth, words that weren't my own. But then begins a journey in my head to work my mind when body's works expired. I thought I'd said it to myself. But when I looked up, they were both looking at me like I was the crazy person in question. Ruby was the first to say something.
Walter, 27th sonnet. Christ!
Vic had redirected her look from Ruby back to me.
Look, Shakespeare, I know you're looking for something to do since Katie left, but this isn't it. I hate to be the one to break the news to you after 24 years in law enforcement, but some people are in jail because they did it.
They had continued talking to me, but their voices had diminished, as if I were falling away from them, even as their siren song continued. October 27th, 11:36 p.m. Dog stood on the wooden walkway with me and stared into the empty motel room. I held the hollow core door back with my right hand and looked around. There was a sagging single bed to the left and a dresser to the right, but what was of more interest was the bathroom door at the far end of the room, which was partially shut with the light on. There were noises coming from the bathroom. I stepped into the room and set my bag on the only chair beside a wobbly round table. Dog started toward the half-closed door, but I made a noise through my teeth that stopped him. There was the sound of metal on metal, a clanking of something into something, a shuffling noise, and then the door opened. Juana, the young woman from the bar, stood there, silhouetted in the backlight of the bare 60-watt bulb. I smiled as I flipped the light switch, illuminating dead flies in the childish cowboy and Indian sconce above the bed. Dog wagged. She blinked and didn't smile back at me or Dog. She held a toolbox in one hand and a pipe wrench like a weapon in the other.
Does he bite?
Nope. She continued to look at the beast as he did his best to convey an even disposition by continuing to wag. She still held the wrench, which looked massive in her small but steady hand.
I don't like dogs.
I picked my bag up by the handles and tossed it onto the bed. It landed against the peeling painted headboard. That's too bad. He likes pretty girls. She didn't move.
I fixed your toilet.
I sat in the empty chair and listened to its recitative of creaks. I took off my hat and rested it on my knee. My head still hurt, and I massaged my eyes in an attempt to drive the headache down my neck. Glad to be in compliance with the you-gotta-have-a-crapper-in-any-room-you-rent law.
I felt guilty about charging you full price. Figured you should have a bathroom that works.
I took a deep breath and looked up at her. She was placing the wrench into the toolbox. Dog sat on the worn, somewhat green carpet between her and the door. I heard you didn't work here anymore. She smiled and stiff-armed a lean on the dresser. It shifted. Pat fires me about once a week. But nobody else will work for him, especially for the nothing he pays. I worked my jaw, lay the back of my head against the cool plaster surface of the wall, and rolled the dice of nationalism. So what's a nice Guatemalan girl like you doing in a place like this?
I'm not legal, and this place is under the radar.
I nodded and looked around. It's that. She continued to study me.
Are you okay?
I took another breath. I've got a headache. She opened the toolbox and pulled out a small plastic bottle of aspirin, uncapped the container, and tapped 6 small orange tablets into my outstretched hand.
Children's. So you'll need 3 times as many.
You keep aspirin in your toolbox?
Priming gives me headaches. She started to turn. They're chewable, but I'll get you some water.
No need. I popped the pills into my mouth and swallowed. She made a face.
How can you do that?
I half smiled, which probably looked more like a smirk. Practice. At a certain point in life, aspirin becomes a major food group. She carried the bottle over and sat on the corner of the bed. She was careful to avoid dog.
You're making everybody around here nervous.
Why is that? A rounded shoulder shrugged.
You just are.
She flipped her hair. Maybe it's because they think you're an insurance man. I swallowed again, feeling the aspirins finally hit bottom. Do I make you nervous?
No. But I don't think you're an insurance man.
What do you think I am?
A cop.
I nodded. And what does Benjamin think?
He thinks you're a cop, too.
I yawned and covered my face with my hand. How do the two of you figure? She put the bottle of aspirin on the bed and reached out to take my hat from my knee.
When you're a fugitive, you get a feeling for these things.
She examined the inside of the black fur felt. 7 3/4 long oval, 10X H-bar hats Billings. The mahogany eyes, young but deep stained with experience, looked back up at me.
If you're federal, and I'm hoping you're not, you flew into Montana and bought a hat so that you could blend in. Or you're from the FBI field office in Billings or Cheyenne.
I stared at her, the pain in my head resurging. What, you taking a mail-order course in how to become a private investigator?
Almost 2 years of law enforcement classes at Sheridan College.
Both shoulders shrugged this time.
Ran out of money.
I sat there without saying anything.
You could be state. Maybe an investigator from DCI, but they were already here.
I nodded. You and Benjamin have very active imaginations.
Or you could be local, but I doubt it. The sheriffs around here couldn't find their butts with GPS.
Really?
Yeah, strictly Barney Fife.
I smiled, this time with my whole mouth. So, bringing the vast experience of 2 years of law enforcement education to bear...
She placed my hat back on my knee and focused on my eyes. Oops. Maybe you are local.
I laughed. So did you know her? Or him?
Both. I cleaned house for them for the better part of a year.
What were they like?
Night and day.
She leaned forward and rested her folded arms on her knees.
She was great. The house was always spotless when I got there, so I'd help her with whatever she needed help with. Painting, planting. She had a greenhouse.
I've seen it.
She had orchids. I've never seen anybody around here with those.
What about him?
She made a face. Loudmouth. If you were around him, you got to hear about just how wonderful he was. No matter what you'd done, he'd done it better. No matter where you'd been, he'd been there. That kind of stuff.
I understand he had his fingers in a lot of pies.
He owned this place at one point, the motel and the bar. It got to where if you came in for a drink, you'd have to listen to him, so people stopped coming. After he died, Pat opened it up again.
Who owned it before, Barr said?
Pat.
Were they partners?
She thought about it. I'm not sure. Wade's business dealings were always a little complex.
In what way? She shrugged. Wade was involved in everything but had this habit of making lists and stuff on little pieces of paper he called kites.
Is that what you called him, Wade?
She studied me. Sounds like you already know a little about what he was like.
A little?
He came on to me one time at their house. I passed, but he got more persistent, and I got out a digging trowel to convince him of my disinterest.
Did it work?
For a while. But then you had to remind him. He was like that.
I heard a few gals weren't exactly disinterested.
She was silent for a moment. A few?
Let's say I was interested, just for argument's sake. Where would I find those women?
She studied me more closely. I'm not naming names, because I'm not sure. But if I was so inclined, I'd check the immediate vicinity of the ranch. Barsad wasn't one to go out of his way to look for female companionship. Looking the way he didn't have to.
Kind of like a journeyman outfielder. He'd catch it if it came near him, but he wasn't going to stretch for it.
Exactly. She smiled. There's an auction over at Bill Nolan's tomorrow morning at 10. I'd imagine everybody'll be there. Might be an opportunity to meet all the players.
I leaned forward and rested my elbows on the armrests of the chair. You still haven't answered the big question. Did she kill him?
She sighed deeply and stood, looking down at me. Are you from around here?
Hereabouts.
There's a myth about this place.
I didn't try to hide my confusion. This town?
No. She crossed to the dresser, fetched the toolbox, and stood there holding it between herself and Dog again. More like the West, or maybe it's the world.
Maybe it's my head. I'm not following.
The myth is that you're supposed to be independent, you know, cowboy up and all that stuff.
Yep.
I don't think they mean for that to apply to everybody, especially women. She nudged toward the door, but Dog didn't move. She gave me a side glance. You want to call him off? I made the same noise through my teeth, picked up the bottle of aspirin, and patted the swale of the bed. He was on it in an instant, wagging and smiling.
He was never on.
I extended the plastic bottle toward her. You want your aspirin? She held the door, and I watched her think about what she was going to say and what she wasn't. Then she spoke again, her voice carrying with the soft buzz of the yellow bug fluorescence outside. Definitely local. Or Billings. How else could you have the dog? Either way, you're a dark horse, that's for sure.
She closed the door, and I listened to her footsteps in a pair of leather sandals as they became a diminishing echo on the wooden walkway. In town, 7 hours, and I'd already been made by an associate degree. October 20th, 7 days earlier, noon. I had rested the DCI file on my desk.
What the fuck are you looking for?
She was diagnosed with chronic insomnia.
So? Vic came in and sat in the chair next to Siza Pretoria, who was eating his lunch on his lap. The Basco was one of the newer additions to our little High Plains contingency, and was still attempting to get over having one of his kidneys filleted only a couple of months ago. I was easing the young man back into duty, but the going was slow after his injury. I'd assigned him court duty and a number of other less strenuous jobs, but it seemed as if a certain light was missing from the Basco's eyes, as if the dark at his pupils was overtaking the spark that had lived there. Sancho wiped some gourmet mayonnaise from the corner of his mouth with an index finger. His wife, Marie, packed his lunch every day and made what looked like incredible sandwiches. He took a sip of his Mountain Dew. She was prescribed both Ambien and Lunesta. I returned to the faxed sheets in the report as Ruby appeared in the doorway. Joe Myers on line one. We all looked at each other. It wasn't every day you got a call from the state attorney general's office, let alone from the ranking officer himself. I picked up the receiver and punched the button. Hey, Joe.
What the heck are you up to?
I like Joe. He was old-school Wyoming and one of the few appointed individuals in the state who still exuded integrity. I'm watching one of my musketeers eat his lunch on his lap, and am thinking about how I've gotten to the age where skipping a few meals won't hurt me. It was quiet on the line for a moment.
Since when did your jurisdiction encompass parts of Campbell County?
I leaned back in my chair, careful to slip my foot under the edge of the desk so that I wouldn't flip over backward, a safety measure I'd adopted after hard-won knowledge. Ah, come on, Joe, I'm just curious.
Well, I've got two investigators down here at DCI that are as mad as a couple of wet hands.
I looked at the faxed report Sizer Pretoria had requested from the Division of Criminal Investigation.
They want to know why it is the celebrated Walt Longmire has taken such a sudden interest in this case.
Vic watched me with more than a trace of amusement on her face.
Well, I've got her in my holding cell for the next 2 weeks, and I'm going to have a word with Sandy Sandberg about that.
Now, Joe.
There was a loud sigh from the state capitol.
You and I both know that's why the Powder River Dry Gulcher sent that woman over to you.
The thought had occurred to me.
Haven't you had enough to do lately?
In the last 12 months, Joe had run interference for me with the Department of Justice, the Philadelphia Police Department, and the California Attorney General's office. It was my turn to sigh.
Maybe you should stick a little closer to home in the next few weeks.
I set the folder on my desk.
I was born in that Powder River country.
I know that, Walt.
It was silent on both ends of the line.
You know we have the highest regard for your abilities here in Cheyenne.
Have you met her?
It was quiet again.
Mary Barsad, have you met her?
No, I can't say that
I have.
And I don't think she did it. It was the longest silence of the conversation, and I sat there waiting. My two deputies stopped chewing and watched me as I argued with the highest sworn official in Wyoming law enforcement.
Walt, you need to be careful. I got another call from the Department of Justice wanting to know in exactly what capacity you were involved with this case.
What?
I told them to go piss up a rope, but in state there are some folks who are thinking about pouring some serious money into Kyle Straub's coffers. Television ads, radio, and the like. I know that it seems like neither of these things has anything to do with the price of cattle in Crook County, but if you're going to stick your neck out for that woman, you better know what you're risking.
I looked at my two deputies, one of whom I was hoping to hand the reins off to in 2 years. What the hell does the FBI have to do with all of this? Other than that, before he was dead, they were spreading him over the country like a venereal disease.
You didn't hear this from me, but there's been talk about the federal marshal's position that's coming up.
I laughed. The idea was ridiculous.
Joe, I'm not even sure I want to be sheriff of Absaroka County anymore.
All I'm saying is that if you're going to do this, you better make sure you do it right.
Well, that's pretty much how I approach all my investigations. I looked at the floor.
Is this what you called to tell me?
Pretty much.
I laughed at the absurdity of it all.
Well, I appreciate you looking out for my back, but you can tell anybody that'll listen, including the Department of Justice, that my political ambitions begin and end here in Absaroka County.
I'll do that, but in the meantime, you watch yourself.
All right?
I will, Joe.
Tell Mary I said hey.
You bet.
I hung up, and my two deputies stared at me. Vic, of course, was the first to speak.
What the hell was that all about?
I studied the phone and thought about the conversation I thought I'd just had. I believe I just had a warning shot from the Department of Justice fired across my bow. They both studied me, but I changed the subject. Ambien and Lunesta? Sancho nudged his ball cap back.
What?
I'm assuming they're sleeping pills. Vic glanced at Sancho and then at me, unwilling to let it go.
What the fuck is going on?
Nothing, just a bunch of political foolishness.
I picked the file back up and began studying the notations in the margin. "What's this stuff about the FDA?"
Sizer Bertoria glanced at Vic, who continued to watch me, and then spoke. "Ambien was pulled by the FDA as unsafe. And then they suggested stronger warnings. They're called sedative hypnotics, and they have a side effect known as complex sleep-related behaviors."
"You hear about this stuff in Rawlins?"
The Basco had been a corrections officer in the state's extreme risk unit. "The Internet. When we got the report from DCI, I looked it up. Technically, it occurs during the slow wave or deep stages of non-rapid eye movement sleep. The subject is usually incoherent, though the eyes remain open, and there are cases where people dress, undress, cook, eat, and even drive cars, completely unaware."
I sat forward. "Wait. You have a computer?"
Sancho had taken the office next to Vic's, but kept his door shut most of the time, an act I felt was somewhat antisocial, considering I didn't even have a doorknob. I looked at Vic.
"He has a computer?"
She shrugged. "He knows how to use one."
"I could learn."
I studied the file. "Do you need a prescription for this stuff?" Sancho picked up his sandwich again. "Yes, but there were about 27 million prescriptions written last year." I flipped the sheets, but couldn't see anything about any prescribed medications.
"Where did Mary Barsad get hers?"
"There's no mention of it in the report, but it was in her bloodstream." I looked up at the Basco. It was important information, but the young man seemed disinterested.
"You figured that out from the blood test?"